Let's Talk, presented by Anna Glavinsky.
So I'm actually sat here drinking my cup of tea with the whole of the mixing desk in front of me, and it reminds me of one of the most horrible mistakes that I have ever made, and it does go what you think it does. I was working live on the radio, and I poured a whole cup of tea over the mixing desk, and yes, it did mess everything up live on the radio. The whole thing just fizzled and stopped. I burst into tears because what else is a grown woman to do when they mess up? And we just had to like shut down the radio, basically. I think put it onto Spotify, take out the mixing desk, send them off to someone getting fixed. It caused days of problems. It was horrendous. I still haven't learnt though. I'm still taking my tea into the studio. I just need to try and not spill it. But at least, you know, it was bad for me, but it didn't change the course of human history. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. People that can put their mistakes, or put my mistake into perspective, really makes me feel a whole lot better about the bad things that I end up doing. Paul, I've got Paul Coulter here, who is in the middle of a tour at the moment, comedy tour, where he's sharing stories like this, but he's also written a book. Good morning, Paul. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, hey, Anna, you've had me cringing because I've spilt vodka Red Bulls over friends' laptops, and the flashbacks are coming back too real to me right now. That's a memory I'd forgotten about. But
do you know, oh my God, it's coming back to me. I remember when I was going out with my first boyfriend, so I was quite young, and we visited his friends who'd just got a new house and a little white chair, like this circle white fabric chair, and they gave me a glass of red wine and said, don't spill it. Yeah. Oh, no.
I remember I stayed with some posh friend's family once, and they had this beautiful white sofa, exactly like you're saying as well. And I was 16 or something, and I got up and like some inky pen in my pocket had just blotted their designer sofa. I think it's just so relatable, right? We all make mistakes. They just don't change history. Then maybe they change our own histories.
Yeah, I think in some cases they certainly do. What is it about these like big blunders that caught your attention and has made you turn it into a book and a show?
It's just relatable, isn't it? Like, we all make mistakes. We make them all the time. We beat ourselves up. You're like, oh no, I left the oven on. Or you do something absolutely stupid and you spend a week just thinking about, like, why did I do that? But then sometimes I think, you know, you walk around the museums or you read a history book and you think these names like Alexander the Great, or you think NASA, or you think Ellen Aquitaine, you think they're just these sort of deities. They've done nothing wrong. And then you realize actually their mistakes are worse than our mistakes. Their mistakes can be stupider than our mistakes. Kind of makes me feel better about my own mistakes. That's basically the whole reason I've done it. Yeah.
It's basically been therapy. What was like therapy. The first mistake that you thought, hang on a minute, there's a story here? Is that the way that it went, actually? I'm just putting myself in your shoes and assuming.
No, you're completely right. Because this all started for me. So I mean, obviously now I'm promoting the book, 10 Mistakes to Change History, and I'm on a tour of the UK. But this all started, I'd done comedy for, I don't know, more than 10 years. It was just a hobby that went wild. Something I was doing after work, and then it got more serious. And then I was in the Sydney Fringe in Australia, and I just put this in just as a little thing, thinking, whatever, you know, two people will turn up, that's the normal fringe audience. And it hit a chord and sold out Sydney, sold out Adelaide, then went crazy at Edinburgh. But the first one I did, I was just writing it thinking no one was going to come. The first one I did was Cleopatra. And I remember I was just thinking it was like the dating scene, because a couple of my friends were telling me how bad the dating scene was. So I did this whole story about Cleopatra swiping right on Julius Caesar and Mark Antony, and how Mark Antony ended up being this sort of terrible boyfriend who made her the last pharaoh of Egypt and changed history. And that was the first one. And I was doing it and I was like, wow, this is so relatable. Mark Antony, he used to swagger around showing off his muscles, he used to like tether lions to chariots. He sounds like a couple of the boyfriends of my sister. So I was like, this is very relatable. So it started on that, and then we went wild on all the other mistakes we've done.
And how do you then, I mean, now that you're actually looking for mistakes, how do you pick them and choose them? How much research do you do?
Oh, I do so much research because the first time I did the show, I just put it together. Like I said, I didn't think many people would come. Sold out Sydney, went crazy. Then I was like, then suddenly, before I knew it, I was on stage at Edinburgh. And in the early days, I used to get what I call history hecklers, which would be like mainly history teachers and people who know a lot about history would line up at the end of the show and they'd be like, well, actually, you got that wrong. So I actually now will do, you know, 3, 4, 5 books on each topic before I even do it. So it's so well researched now, the show, but it's obviously it's comedy, but you've got to make sure you're bulletproof on the history. I find them.
Is that just so that you can combat the hecklers? I mean, could you not just say this is a comedy show, not a lecture in your promotion and, you know, go from there?
Well, I think you've just got to think, the way I've worked it out now is if you're doing anything history, you have to be bulletproof. You have to make sure that you've got it completely right. Because if you get the history fans, you get the comedy fans, they're all coming out. The comedy fans want to laugh, the history fans want the history, but you have to make sure that you're 100% on the history and that they trust you and then they'll come with you on the journey because they're like, oh, he's just not making it up. He's bulletproof. So now, yeah, we've got that locked down now. I read so much history. I'm just a big nerd. When I was 8 years old, I used to walk around dressed as an English Civil War knight. I'm that kind of kid. So I've always been reading history.
What did an English Civil War knight wear?
Used to wear like a helmet. Like I was going for the parliamentarian side, like a little helmet and stuff. The teacher said, come to school dressed as your superhero. I came as an English Civil War knight. Like everyone else was Batman or Superman or Spider-Man. That's what I turned up as. So clearly this was a thing that was always going to be a problem for me. I just read loads of history. So obviously by doing that, you find the mistakes. I find that you can't do it backwards. You can't say, oh, I want to do a mistake about Beethoven. You almost have to just read a lot and find it. You can't backtrack it often. You have to read a lot, and then once you've discovered a turning point in history, you often find it's a step up.
That's a really interesting point, actually, because I was wondering, like, you just have to read loads and loads then and wait for it to come to you. You can't actually force this to happen. You must know so much random stuff then by now.
I think so. I didn't realize when I was writing the book, I was writing away and you'd be writing one chapter and suddenly you'd find something else and you'd be like, wow, that's a cool fact. Like Amelia Earhart, like she's one of the big chapters in the book. And I was writing about her and about her expedition across the North Atlantic. And I discovered out her engineer was Buzz Aldrin. Buzz Aldrin's dad was the engineer for Amelia Earhart. You know, when he was born, he saw men fly. I think about 7 years old, he saw the first men fly. He then sees Amelia Earhart cross the Atlantic. And when he's 70, he sees his son walk on the moon. You just see these crazy facts and you can't discover them. You just find it when you're researching the book and trying to add comedy and history together. And the stories are amazing. Yeah.
But, you know, you can find out all that information and it's interesting. It's mind blowing. But how, for you personally, how do you put on that comic spin? How do you know that this is the one that's got the little comedy hook?
Well, the secret is, like, what I've worked out, because now I've stood on stage so many times, you see the faces, you hear the laughter, and you're working it out. But what I've worked out is actually it's got to be about the people element. What made history so boring for so many people at school is they just hear dates, they hear kings, and it's just dates and kings and numbers, different king waving a sword. So you're not actually, like, it's boring. You lose attention to it. So what I try and do when I'm on stage or when I'm writing the book is I try and make it relatable human characters. So instead of, oh, Alexander the Great, oh, you know, Louis the Seventh, you start to think of them as a person, like, you know, Alexander the Great, like he was basically like a gym bro and his seven mates were these big muscly generals, very similar to the sort of guys that I see all the time. You know, you make them relatable, you bring their personalities to life. And then if they stuff up or they do something stupid, for you, it's, you don't need to know someone who's created an ancient army or led an ancient kingdom. We know people who are lazy. You know, we know people who are greedy. We know people who are, I don't know, arrogant. If you can make these historical characters relatable, then people will laugh because they can associate it with the people that they know in their lives.
And would you be willing to give us sort of just a bit more on one of your particular favourites from the book? And I don't want people to think they've got everything here on the radio, so they don't need to go to shows or they don't need to buy your book. But, you know, a little teaser about which one that you particularly like.
No problems at all. I mean, my favourites was always the last one I wrote. So there's a lot of favourites in there. But one of the absolute favourites for me is the Titanic. And I think we all know the Titanic from the cheesy movie.
Love the Titanic, yeah.
I watched it on the plane lately. The guy next to me moved seats. I was like, all right.
Were you crying or laughing?
He looked at me with a face that implied that I was the saddest man on the plane and moved to another seat. But I loved it. I loved it. So yeah, the Titanic was great because I think we all think we know it. Like, there's so many podcasts, so many books. We all know the movie. We all know the mistakes, not enough lifeboats. We know that, you know, there weren't enough lookouts. Captain puts the ship full speed ahead, ignores all the iceberg warnings. We know that. But when I do the book and when I do the show, I do a mistake by someone not involved in the Titanic, not even involved in the engineering of the Titanic, because on the night the Titanic sank, 5 to 8 miles away, there was another ship sitting on the horizon. All the passengers could see it. It was fully lit up. It did nothing to save the Titanic because everyone on board that ship was fast asleep. And the captain got woken up 3 times in the night about this mystery ship on the horizon. And he refused to even go on deck to check it out, even when they said there were fireworks. So that ship, if he'd gotten out of bed and he'd actually turned his engines on, putted over to the Titanic, he could have saved most of the lives on board. We wouldn't have had the horrible loss of life or a cheesy 1997's movie. So it's quite a big one.
That's, it feels like a gut punch. I'm like struggling to find the comedy here, to be honest.
Yeah, I tell you what, yeah, like it, you have to look into it and go into the little stories into it, and then you find the comedy in it. So when you nail down, you find those things and they pop out. But yeah, it's a crazy, crazy story.
And
but one of my favorites on stage.
And for you, what's, are there huge creative differences? What do you prefer, being on stage or writing a book? They're wholly different processes.
Very different. I think when you're on stage, half the writing happens when you're actually on stage and you're talking to the audience and you see what works. You could be like, this works, it doesn't work. And then I started as an improv comedian, so I'm quite used to just making things up on the spot. And then you'd improvise a line. Yeah, it takes a lot of work on stage, but you improvise a line and then someone reacts to it and then you build that out and it becomes something. So when I do a live show, often by the time I've come to Edinburgh, it's basically, I've built it from working with audiences and you know what works, what doesn't work, and you know what's really funny and what's not funny. And you know the bits where it's storytelling with comedy. So you know when you're in storytelling mode, you know when you're in comedy mode. The book, you're on your own writing. The great thing about the book, which was really fun, was that you can tell stories you couldn't do on stage. On stage, it needs to be quite simple. You've got 10 to 12 minutes to say it. It needs to be really straightforward. You can't do too much detail. So I avoid battles. I avoid too many dates, too many names. I always like to go for very clear characters. In the book, it was great. I could do, like, I did like Napoleon. We did Eleanor of Aquitaine, Apollo 13, Alexander Fleming. These are stories that you can't really do on stage. And it was just so fun to get extra detail, flesh out those extra stories, find those funny little side tangents so that, yes, you've got these big moments from history, but then you've got these funny things that go in on the side. So it was really great.
That's awesome. So the people who are already fans of your show can actually get something extra by reading the book. It's not just a regurgitated, you know, something that you're already doing.
Completely. I think if you come to the show, I'll do, if I'm doing 5 mistakes, I'll normally do 3 mega ones. And then I'll do two little ones that maybe change like the history of food or the, you know, history of one particular culture, something to surprise people with. But if you read the book, we've got 10 of probably the biggest, most amazing stories in human history, you know, a sweep of 2,500 years. And 6 of them I've never done on stage. And I probably won't do on stage, but they were just super fun to write, super fascinating. Often by those names that you've always heard, like Amelia Earhart. I knew about Amelia Earhart. I'm a history fan. I didn't know the full story. So it was fun to then get the chance to write it. And yeah, you read the book, you're going to be an expert on all these things and hopefully have a couple of laughs along the way. So it's great.
And now that you've learned how to ward off the history hecklers by getting all your facts straight, do you get people like me who are just like offloading their mistakes onto you now? People like, yeah, I did this stupid thing. And you're just like hearing it all the time.
No, I love it. I love it. I love it when you get those sort of sliding door moments when you talk to people and they're like, I made a mistake and then I met my husband or I made this. And I think that's why I love the idea of mistakes, because it's that sliding door moment. You're like, if they didn't do something really small, something tiny, where would we have ended up in our own personal lives and where would history have ended up? So it's amazing. I love that. And I love, my favorite thing about doing it live and now doing the book is just getting to meet all the people who've read it or all the people who come to my live show and hear their stories. And sometimes they're really cool. Like, I learn a lot. So I learn from the audience. I talk to the audience for like an hour after the show because they've just got the best stories. It's great.
Yeah. Aww, and they teach me. So you're a very accessible comedian. I love that. So where else are you still touring? Have you got any dates coming up that you can announce before we do?
Yeah, so my website is historymistakes.com and History Mistakes is my Instagram handle as well. So I'm on a 55 tour date tour at the moment, which is my mistake to take too much on, to be honest. So at the moment, I'm in a premiere in on the way to another show.
I love a premiere in, by the way.
They're really good.
They're
aren't they?
Really good. Have you noticed like the attention to detail? So I stayed in one about a year ago and I was just mind blown. They have like little bottle. Have you seen the little bottle openers that are like stuck to the desk? And they've got like you can order pizza at 4 o'clock in the morning for the. Yeah, they've got like the drunk menu for the drunk ones coming home from the party.
Ever, like everything works, everything's lovely. I was kind of dreading it before the trip. I was like, oh no, I'm going to be in a premiere inn, but they all look the same. So when I'm on tour, every time I come back, it feels like I'm in the same bedroom, even though I've moved to another town. And the breakfast is great. I'm all over it. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but hitsmistakes.com. I'm doing 55 at the moment. I'm doing 22 at the Edinburgh Fringe, just finishing the June, July tour up and going up to Halifax. I've got Worcester. And then in September, October, I'm going to do another 18, a lot in the north, a lot around London, and a lot in the southwest of the UK. And then hopefully next year I'll be doing even more touring. So we've just found that a lot of people in the UK and Australia, we do a lot of this in Australia as well. They just really love going. It's something different, right? It's not a stand-up show. It's storytelling with history, with comedy. There's nothing else like it. It's a lot of fun and we have a load of laughs and we learn a lot. So yeah, I love it. I love the people that come out to it and I'm just really grateful that people are into it.
It's super unique. It's super awesome. So best of luck with it for the rest of the year and the whole of next year as well. You're definitely hitting the ground running. And the book itself is called 10 Mistakes That Changed History. You can find it on the Talk Radio Europe bookshop or on Amazon or pop it into Google and I'm sure you'll find it there. Paul Corter, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me on. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.